Thank you, Mr. Davis. I'd like to now ask the question of Dr. Brennbaum and Dr. Foster. Both of you have raised the need for better data collection and pollination activities and colony health, particularly the need for having accurate annual surveys of bee colonies. Both of you assert data collection to be as a critical component to monitoring the health of pollinators. Can you tell the committee what the cost of such a survey might be? And Dr. Rexroad, you're free to chime in as well as we go forward.
Interestingly, that's not one of the issues we discussed in our committee, is what the cost of implementation would be. But just to put this in context, you know, there's no free lunch, essentially. The U.S. ag economy has been benefiting from, altruism of honeybees, in the sense that for decades, pollination services were not paid for. They were assumed to be available for free. There is controversy about putting a dollar value on pollination services. And the number that's frequently quoted is $14 billion. That's from a study that's already 10 years old. I don't know what that would be in 2007 dollars, but averaged over the years, this is billions and billions of dollars. And $9 million may sound like a lot, but this is a multi-billion dollar enterprise. It just is diffuse and basically is intercalated throughout the entire ag enterprise in the United States. It's one reason it's difficult to rally the those most directly affected. I mean, most directly affected are beekeepers, but in reality, bees and other pollinators are an essential component of countless, well, over 90 crops in North America.
Right.
So
we're going to have to keep our answers just a little bit short because we have an impending vote. No problem. Thank you very much for your answer, though. Dr. Cox-Foss.
So at a recent meeting with the colony collapse disorder down in Florida, we did discuss a survey on what the cost would be. We came up with the estimated value of at least $1 million. And part of the problem that we face is that within different states, we no longer have state apiarists in place who would help to facilitate this. And we have many obvious beekeepers, sidelined beekeepers out there that we need to also monitor and learn what they're doing. So it will be an extensive issue, and also one in which we need to respect and maintain the confidentiality of some beekeepers and for security reasons.
Very good. Thank you. Dr. Rexford, do you agree with this? And I'm going to ask my last question at the same time so you can answer both in time expediency. In your testimony, you noted that a request to USDA APHIS for national honeybee pest surveys was declined last year. Do you know why that request was denied?
I'll answer the second question first, and we can find that information for you, but I don't know right now why it is. But I do think there are two different approaches to answering the question of how we should do surveys. One is the question of within NAS, the statistical service, of whether or not we should change that. And we don't know what the cost would be of changing that from focusing on honey as the commodity as opposed to the pollination services. I think an alternative way to look at that, though, is to look at this, and we look forward to some more information from a consortium that Dr. Cox-Foster is a part of, is looking at this scientifically to discover in a survey system what the problems are, the direct problems are with the bee colonies.
Thank you. I now want to recognize my colleagues. As you've noted, they've gotten back from the White House. They've had a very busy morning, and I appreciate their attendance. And I turn it over to my ranking member, Mr. Nagbar.
Thank you, Chairman, and I will submit my opening statement for the record so we can get into questions. Chris Rode, does the USDA regulate the interstate movement of honeybees and honeybee pests, and if not, why not?
APHIS has the authority to regulate the movement of honeybee pests and of the colonies if they are contaminated with a pest. In particular, I might mention that they at one point, when Varroa mites were discovered in the United States in a Wisconsin apiary, did for a short time restrict the movement of colonies. However, what they discovered subsequent to that was that pest was widely spread throughout the United States, and that there was no benefit to restricting the movement of those colonies. But they do have the authority.
Okay. My second question is along that same line. From where are we allowing the importation of adult honeybees, and how do we justify allowing these importations?
Currently, we allow the importation of honeybees from Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. In each case, there's been a risk assessment done by APHIS looking at the types of pests that are prevalent in those countries, determine whether or not they're free of pests, and in addition, if they do have pests, whether or not those are the same pests that are present in the United States already, so that they wouldn't add an additional burden to the bee population.
And have you determined any problems? I mean, do you think we're doing a good job of inspecting these, and that we're not bringing a problem from somewhere else into our country?
I think the risk assessments would suggest that we're doing a good job. In a very specific way, though, what the specific inspections are, I couldn't speak to right now.
This is to the entire panel. This phenomenon of CCD, is that a problem in just in the U.S., or is this a problem that's going on in other parts of the country, other parts of the world? And just go down the panel there.
So with the CCD, the surveys that we've been doing, we've been asking if these unique symptoms that we find in these colonies that collapse are present. We find that they are occurring across the entire continental United States. Recently, we have reports out of Canada that they have the exact same symptoms and collapses ongoing there. There are other collapses ongoing in other parts of the world. As we can determine right now, they don't match these exact same symptoms. But I think we need to further define that and gain their researchers, get them on board with what we're seeing.
I know there's been some concern in Germany over inexplicable bee mortality, but again, whether it's the same phenomenon or not, it's difficult to ascertain if we don't know what's causing this phenomenon.
Do you think within the there's collaboration going on with these other countries to talk about some of these issues and to join the science together?
So I know that I've been personally contacted by people from other countries, researchers, to ask whether we're seeing the same thing. And I know that Dr. Jeff Pettis, who's USDA ARS, has also been contacted and involved in these discussions. Likewise, other members of the CCD working group are actively involved. But I think it is a growing problem. I know at various people involved in the CCD working group that we've been deluged with media attention, including media and the questions from outside the United States, that this is a global issue or being recognized as a problem.
Dr. Rexrode, I guess the question I would have is USDA collaborating with the agricultural entities and ministries in some of the other countries? Is there some ongoing dialogue at that level?
From the research agency level, most of the dialogue is scientist to scientist. These folks are very involved. They know each other. The worldwide community of people that do this kind of science is not large, so they're very aware. At a higher level, at the ministry level, probably less so. We rely very much on the scientists keeping those lines of communication open and providing us information on what the issues are and what approaches others are doing, using.
I believe my time is about to expire. Appreciate the gentleman.
Thank you, Mr. Nagbar. I appreciate your questions. I have one final question for the panel. That would be, we have documented pretty well today the decline in organized hives and the business of beekeeping. You also testified, however, that there's been precipitous declines of wild bee hive activity. Could you all speak to that? As you hear, we have votes coming up, so we'll take this as our last question. We'll take a recess at the end of your answers, and then we'll come back after votes, reconvene the hearing to hear the second panel. With regard to the wild bee question, please.
Well, again, the results of the NRC study mostly documented the scarcity of data, but those few examples, the most charismatic species, are known to have experienced decline, including some in your home state, actually. There's one bumblebee species that hasn't been seen is thought to have gone extinct, which actually happens to be a crop pollinator as well. So there's a taxonomic impediment, an unfortunate situation where we don't even have an ability to assess the diversity of wild pollinators, but there are a number of surveys that have been done, long-term monitoring surveys that have been done in England and in Belgium and elsewhere in Europe, cooperatively among the European Union, that clearly demonstrate that there are many different groups of pollinators that are experiencing declines.
As you discuss this, could you also discuss the potential impact, whether there is or is not any impact that you know of from the Africanized bees that came north a few years ago and I assume are still with us?
So I could address that. With the Africanized bees, it's interesting that they seem to be much more resistant or refractory to the varroa mites themselves. And in those areas where the Africanized bees are, namely in Arizona, they are not seeing this collapse ongoing in those colonies. So there is a chance there that there are genes present in that particular strain of Apis mellifera, the honeybee, that could be utilized or directed towards breeding a more resistant bee strain. So the Africanized bee by itself doesn't appear to be impacted by the colony collapse disorder right now.
Can Africanized bees be used to pollinate, and are they a threat to the general population?
So the researchers I know at the Tucson Bee Lab, Gloria DeGrande Hoffman, swears by Africanized bees and that they are great pollinators and wonderful. You do have to maintain certain size limitations on the colonies in order to have them be effective pollinators and not present extreme defensiveness that they can exhibit. So there is potential there to manipulate them, but there's also potential there to get genetic stock away from the defensive traits to be incorporated in our more gentle European strains.
The evidence that we have currently on the colony collapse disorder and its association or non-association with wild bee colonies is pretty much anecdotal. I do think it's an important question, a much tougher one to grab a hold of, because we don't have somebody overseeing those bees on a daily basis to see the bees disappear and not be present. But we do think it's an important question. We're hoping it's one that the consortium will spend some time on also.
We do have reports from recognized researchers at Harvard who have made observations and relayed them to us that they have seen collapses or deaths of bees from probably feral colonies, that there are no managed hives around. So it is an issue that we need to address.
Clearly, there's been a compelling case for more research to be made this morning in this first panel. Thank you very much for your testimony. We will reconvene the hearing directly after the last vote on the floor of the House. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Committee is temporarily in recess.